Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Tricked you again, didn't I? This hour is being sponsored by Robert Reiner. It's not Rob Reiner, is it, Kathy? Is that Rob? I don't know. Robert Reiner. He has a message. The very best weekly one-hour radio show is offered free through alternativeradio.org. Likewise, the best weekly half-hour radio show is Counterspin, offered on a sliding scale at fair.org. Okay. Thanks, Robert. I wonder if that's... No, couldn't be. Because of what has... I don't know which topic to get to first here. Personal thing or these topics? Let me do the topics first because they tie together. The Republican plan for a payroll tax cut, you know, to maintain what's already in place, was voted on in the House today. It passed 234 to 193. 10 Democrats voted yes. Those Democrats should be defeated in the very next election. Just have their asses kicked right on out. Go become Republicans. Anyway, in order to pay for it, the Republicans are going to cut Medicare. Now, this is going to go down in the Senate, of course. It won't get there. And Obama has threatened to veto it. So not to worry. But the Republican-controlled House of Representatives voted 234 to 193 to pass this, even though a spokesperson for Obama said he'll veto it, and Harry Reid said he'll never make it through the Senate. Doesn't make any difference. The Republicans are hell-bent on destroying the country. That should be obvious now to anyone who's been paying the least bit of attention. I'm not talking about you, sir. You listen to Fox News, or you, ma'am, you listen to Limbaugh. You're crazy. But for normal people, and there's still a lot of us left in the country, there is no doubt of what the Republicans are doing. Now, the Republicans refuse what the Democrats have suggested, a surtax on people making over $1 million a year, a temporary surtax of, what, 3% or something. Instead, the Republicans want to cut Medicare. They also, you know what else was in this bill? Let me just cut right to the chase here. The Republicans put a bunch of poison pills in here that guarantee it's going to fail. And the only reason they're doing this is so next spring or summer they can start their campaigns to say the Democrats voted against the payroll tax cut that we proposed, and therefore the Democrats voted for a tax hike. This is what these filthy bastards are doing. There are a bunch of poison pills in the payroll tax extension bill. First of all, it blocks environmental review of the Keystone Pipeline. Yeah. This is a tax bill about continuing something Obama started to give people in this country a break right now when we desperately need it. And the Republicans are saying, well, no, but here's the bill. No environmental review of the Keystone Pipeline. Now, what does that mean to you? Mm-hmm. For people who find themselves unemployed because of Republican capitalist tricks, outsourcing, destroying jobs, in order to get unemployment, you have to prove that you have, or you must go get, a GED. Right. In order for the Republicans to agree to any kind of a temporary continuation of this bill, also, no more regulations on incinerators and boilers. Mm-hmm. In order for the Republicans to agree to continue this tax cut and not increase taxes on the working class, not the billionaires and million, but the working class, also no more preventive health care fund in any kind of Obama sponsored health insurance reform. get rid of the preventive health care fund. Mm-hmm. Oh, and anybody who is on unemployment must get mandatory drug tested. Besides the methods of paying for the bill, which is a 2%, means testing Medicare so that recipients making over $85,000 a year have to pay a higher premium. In addition to that, the Republicans decided it would also, like I mentioned, stop the clean air regulations estimated to save 20,000 lives. No more clean air regulations. These are murderous savages. These Republicans are criminals. They are people who are hell-bent on destroying the country. Now, what do you want to do about it? They want to slash emergency unemployment benefits from 73 weeks to 33 weeks. This is all in this bill. And force the jobless to prove they're not on drugs in order to get unemployment benefits. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, which leads me, now I understand also, it's very, very difficult for me to control my fury. It really is. I told a couple of people, I better not say it. I'm not going to say it. No, never mind. In addition to all this, Mitt Romney's economic plan would provide $6.6 trillion in budget-busting tax cuts to the wealthiest Americans and corporations. $6.6 trillion over a 10-year period. Newt Gingrich's plan outdoes him. Under Gingrich's plan, the average millionaire would get a whopping $615,000 annual tax cut. Those in the wealthiest 0.1% would receive an annual tax cut of more than $2 million each, on top of what they're already getting from the Bush tax cuts. In other words, under the Gingrich plan, millionaires would pay a lower tax rate than middle-class families making $40,000 to $50,000 a year. Now, how much more of this you want to take before you finally decide that it's time to get all Jeffersonian on these bastards and, water the tree of liberty? How much of this do you want to take? In 2015, which is 4 years from now, not even, 3 years from now, the tax giveaway to millionaires and billionaires alone would be about the same size as the entire Medicare budget under the Paul Ryan Republican budget plan. This is Newt's plan. So in one sentence, in the race to deliver trillions in tax cuts to the wealthiest Americans, Newt Gingrich is a winner by a landslide. I mean, this is insane. Only it's an insanity that you and I don't have to share. And that's what I want to get to here. This would be a good a time as any to make this very clear. So we'll take a break and get back here. And I want to have a heart-to-heart with you, okay? Do you mind? Is old Uncle Mike entitled to a heart-to-heart? I hope so, because I'm not going to be the guy that advocates armed revolution. I just can't do that. So I have a better idea. A different idea. Let me just put it that way, a different idea. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Conservative Show. All substance, no abuse.
The war against disorder from 21 past the hour. Now, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know that I've got some pretty strong views where it concerns the Democrats and the Republicans. My feeling is that capitalist America, corporatist America, however you want to call it, has pretty much, or fascist America, that works too, has pretty much taken over our electoral system completely. They have commercialized voting. They are corporatizing education. Healthcare has long been corporatized. The military is being corporatized. We've got to do something. And like I said, I don't want to be the one that says it's time to take up weapons and overthrow the government. That's not me at all. You also know my feelings about Democrats. I feel that Democrats, for the most part, are cowards. Elected Democrats. Not the rank and file out here in the street, because we are not owned. That's what the Occupy movement's about. Yes, Occupy is not about Democrat or Republican, I understand. But you can bet your ass that the Occupy people are not, they're not apolitical. They do have a political agenda, and it starts with where the whole movement started, Occupy Wall Street. Now, that can be debated all night long. I'm only giving my personal opinion. I don't speak for anybody in any capacity. This is from my observation. That's all. So if you're with Occupy and you don't like what I just said, no offense. I don't mean to categorize this movement or codify it or give it a definition. No, I'm just, from my point of view, there's not a Republican out there in the Occupy movement. And I don't think the movement is apolitical. So who does that leave? Okay, it leaves anarchists, it leaves communists, socialists, and Democrats. It just does. So moving on. There are members of the Democratic Party, still members of the party, who have not been taken over by corporate America. They are few, but it's a starting point. So, for the rest of this political season, with a couple of exceptions, like these 10 Democrats who voted for this abomination of a bill, I am going to go to the fallback position. And I know I'm going to catch a whole lot of crap from some of you people about this, but, you know, so what? I can certainly withstand that. The fallback position for me is one more shot with Democrats. And I'll tell you why. And you know why. I don't have to tell you. A Republican takeover of this country at this point ends this country permanently. We'll never get it back. Ever. Short of that armed revolution that I am not going to be the one to call for. Somebody will. It won't be me. So short of armed revolution, short of just a horrific situation in this poor, tired, dying empire, we have got to vote yet again. Not for the lesser of two evils, because the Democratic Party principles are still intact. Republican Party principles have always been evil. Now, there have been rotten men and women who join the Democratic Party and get elected. But to me, Democratic Party principles are the only thing we've got. It's pretty difficult to elect a president and hold his feet to the fire as Obama talked about. It is not so hard to elect representatives and hold their feet to the fire. Because they know that 8 months after they take office, if not 8 minutes after they take office, they've got to start the process all over again if they want to keep their jobs. So I'm going to advocate for Democrats, with some exceptions. Now, to you, this may not matter worth a damn. And if not, that's cool. To you, it may make you think, oh, Malloy sold out again. If that's your attitude, have at it. I mean, you know, this is talk radio. This is not brain surgery. But for me personally, this is a personal decision that I've come to, because what I've seen over the past 2 years has been horrifying, what these Republicans are hell-bent on doing. I do not want to see this experiment in self-governance end, and I do not want to see bloody revolution in the streets. So my idea, for me, I will be in the voting, in my voting booth, even though I know the voting is rigged here in Georgia, even though I know that, I'll still be there with Molly, with Kathy, on November, 2nd, 3rd, whatever it is, in 2012, and I will be voting for Democrats. I hope you'll do the same.
Truth Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Now, how you vote for the president is your business. That's the president doesn't pass laws. The president can be impeached and removed from office. A president has the bully pulpit, and yes, he can make recess appointments, and there's certain things he can do. But if a Democratic president understands that he now has an activist Democratic Congress behind him, and knowing the restrictions on the U.S. Constitution, I think perhaps he would act differently from, and I'm referring to Obama, from how he's acted these first 2.5-3 years. There's an awful lot of things that really turned my stomach about Barack Obama, the treatment of these non-combatants, these prisoners at Guantanamo, the treatment of Bradley Manning, I mean, there's a whole list. I'm not going to go down the entire list. It's very easy for me or for you to be, in a political sense, either black or white. No shades of gray. It may not be as easy for someone elected to be president of the United States to deal with that. I don't know, and you'll never know, because you're never going to be president, and neither am I. So, but you could become a member of Congress. So could I. And those people are elected for 2-year terms. They are regional. They are not national. They should have a sense of both the fact that they are regional representative and the fact that they can write policy that affects the entire nation. But they're not, members of Congress are not, obviously, in the executive branch. So I'm not going to worry so much about Barack Obama this go-around. I fully expect he's going to be reelected. And I think he'll be reelected because the Republican Party is what it is. And although there will be a certain number of Americans who are going to vote for one of these Republican clowns or would-be dictators, I don't think there's any doubt at this point, short of something that just unforeseen right now, that Obama's going to be reelected, whether you vote for him again or I vote for him again or not. But my concern is the lawmaking. My concerns are the lawmaking bodies of our government and what you and I have seen, because we've been paying attention, over the past 10 years now. We have seen 8 years of predominantly Republican-dominated politics or Democrats terrified to resist. And those are the kind of Democrats that are going to have to be removed. They're going to have to be removed just like you remove bugs from your house if you have a house with bugs in them. You have to get rid of them. I'm talking about the creepy crawly kind. You've got to get rid of them because you're not going to live in a healthy house if you got cockroaches and silverfish and all these creepy crawlies running around your house. We're not going to be a healthy nation if we have cowardly Democrats running around the House of Representatives. So there is a strategy here. It's one thing to complain, to paint a very dark picture constantly. I don't know how I could do otherwise. I'm not a Pollyanna. I can't sit here and say, but there's a glimmer of hope over there. But there's a little bit over there. Ooh, there's a little sliver of hope. I just can't do that. First of all, it's not my nature. Secondly, I don't see the slivers. I just don't. So for those who say, Malloy, you're so negative, and you put negative people on, like Bob Alexander, or at times, most of the time, Prairie 2, or people who write negatively about the education system, which I'm going to take on tonight, like our education correspondent, Kay Petrini, or comments that come from Michael and Roswell, the whole list of people who contribute to this program, I know. Sheila Sample is another example. I could just go on and on here. You know who you are. But these are not people who are negative from the standpoint, I think I'll be negative. These are people who are facing reality. I've never considered myself to be a fantasist. Is that the way you pronounce it? I do consider myself to be as much of a realist as possible. I've got my little spiritual aspects that you all don't even know about. But when it comes to day-to-day living, I try to be a realist because I've found that's the only way to function. That's the only way you can get from sunrise to sunset. And it's damn sure the only way you can raise children. Or be in a marriage, or be in a relationship with a significant other because the cockroaches won't allow you to marry your partner because you're same sex. You know what I'm saying? But the damage that has been done in the past 10 years and the ongoing damage by Republicans / conservatives / fascist / corporatist / capitalist has got to stop. And until such time as someone does call for bloody revolution, the ballot box is still about the only thing we have. Even understanding that it's been rigged, but it hasn't been completely rigged. And you know what the proof of that is? The absolute frantic attitude that Republicans have across the country to make it harder and harder and harder for people whom they consider would normally vote Democratic from voting. We see it all the time. Photo IDs. You got to provide this. You got to provide that. Give us a DNA sample. Whatever it is. So, to me, that is proof positive that it's not a fait accompli that this country has become a fascist state. We are so close to it, though. And I'm telling you, about 6 years ago, on a program one night, I said, And I was using irony, satire of a sort. Came to find out some people took me seriously. But I said, it's not real difficult living under fascism if you are in the certain category that supports it. If you are not in that category and keep your mouth shut, you'll probably survive. But let the fascists designate a category the way apparently Muslims have been designated in this country, the way people of color have been designated in this country for a long time, the way the native peoples of this country have been designated for a long time. You fall into that group and your ass is as useless as a fart in the wind. So, we're not at quite yet the level of fascism that a lot of us have been talking about and trying to get people to notice is happening, swirling around us here in these times. I'm not talking about back in the 30s when it almost did happen. So I hope that you will do what most of us should do. I think as long as we are living in a society that has not become completely totalitarian, completely fascist, and that is to give this some very serious thought. Opting out completely is a choice, is an option. Working to build a third party is an option. That's a good option. But I don't know that it's going to work now. In order to build a third party, why? Why not stay with the Democratic Party and kick out the cowards, kick out the people who are not real Democrats? Wouldn't that make, to me, I shouldn't frame it as a question. To me, that makes more sense. Because we have the party philosophy. We have the party structure. We have a party history. We also have some real worthless sons of bitches who have come into our party. They put a D behind their name and say, oh, I'm a Democrat. No, you're not. You're an imposter. So those are the people to kick out. But wouldn't it be better to kick them out and put in Democrats than it would be to start the arduous task of spending the next four decades, and we'll never get there, building a political party? The reason we'll never get there is because once we pull back from true Democrats, then the fascists have won. And when the fascists win, everybody else loses. All you have to do is take a look at what is happening. Look at these bills that the Republicans are jamming through Congress. Look what they've done for the past 10 years. So, that's where I'm at. And if over the next 8-9 months you find this program supremely irritating because all of a sudden it appears like I've sold out to the idea of voting, working to elect real Democrats, I that's your problem. That's not mine. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not trying to be a prick here. I'm not trying to be a hard ass. I'm not trying to be, you know, all, ooh, ooh, look at me. I'm just saying that the survival of this country now is at risk. It really, well, it has been for a long time, but it's right at that tipping point. We've got issues. We've got survival issues staring us in the face. And now I'm not talking about who gets elected or appointed the Supreme Court. I could care less about that branch. I am concerned about the legislative branch. That's where the power is. So, we'll be back after the break. Wait a minute. This hour is being sponsored by Robert Reiner. His message, the very best weekly one-hour radio show, is offered free through alternativeradio.org. Likewise, the best weekly half-hour radio show is Counterspin, offered on a sliding scale at fair.org.
Still calling across the years. And they're all crying. Ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will till we all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free.
Hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
Well, I'm trying to. 10 before the hour. And again, this hour has been sponsored by Robert Reiner. The message Rob has with his sponsorship, the very best weekly one hour radio show, is offered free through alternativeradio.org. Likewise, the best weekly half hour radio show is Counterspin, offered on a sliding scale at fair.org. Robert, thanks for the sponsorship. Regarding Democrats that I will vote for, they are Democrats who, unlike Nancy Pelosi or people, or Harry Reid, they would have held the war criminals responsible. Dick Cheney is out there floating around like a turd, like he always does. attacking the Obama administration on the most specious of grounds. There are all sorts of things you could say about the Obama administration. But Cheney, being the warmongering son of a bitch that he is, I wish this guy would just suck in his last breath and leave this country alone. He is a clear, I'll use his term, a clear and present danger to everything American. Why television networks, other than that filthy dunghole Fox, why networks put him on the air for anything is beyond me. He is a murderous war criminal, and every single producer, every single interviewer understands that, or they don't understand the laws of their own country. Oh, what am I saying? That's could be either or, couldn't it? But the Democrats I'm talking about are the people, unlike Obama, who will say, yeah, in order to move forward, we have to clean up the mess that's behind us. And then start arresting these sons of bitches and putting them on trial. They have violated every single international law. They are war criminals. I'm talking about George Bush all the way down into the sewer where you find the scum that are now teaching at universities. Like John Yoo. I'm talking about Democrats who will stop the cowardice crap and start governing the country in a manner that helps all of us. Not just the top 0.1%, or 0.5%, or 1%, or 5, or 10. Then everybody has a chance. I'm talking about Democrats who understand that we are facing extinction as a species unless we do something about global warming and about getting off fossil fuels. So, I'm not talking about just going to the poll and voting for somebody with a D behind his name or her name. I'm talking about Democrats. We have the platform. We have the party structure. And we have men and women in this country who are capable of providing the kind of leadership slash survival that we need now. The Republicans are going to murder all of us. They are going to kill you, Mr. Right-Winger. They're going to cut your throat, Ms. Conservative. I don't give a goddamn how far up your ass you stick your head. They are going to kill you. They are going to end your country. And to you Democrats and progressives and people who have dropped out of the system altogether because you're so fed up with it, I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. But there's only two ways I can fight. Pick up a gun, go for the bullet, ammo box, or go for the ballot box. I'm going to try the ballot box one more time. One more time. And I'm going to be very careful. We've got clear delineation of progressives and these hog-snotted Republicans here in Georgia. Very clear delineation. There is no, when I vote for a Democrat here, I know what I'm getting. Now, you people in the rest of the country, I don't know. It's up to you to do, you know, whatever you think where it concerns somebody, a man or woman who runs for public office with a D behind his or her name. It's up to you to find out, is that really a Democrat or is that somebody who's just trying to game the system looking for looking for employment? So, I'm at that point where I understand completely, and I think you do too, that this country is sitting on a knife's edge. And that unless progressives, Democrats, liberals get control of the system, they're having the same problem in Europe. I mean, the same thing is going on there. How many shootings today? How many crazed right-wingers went berserk today? Shooting people and throwing grenades in major cities in Europe. Look at the guy who executed 63 people, a Glenn Beck follower for sure. I mean, this is real. This is real. It's really happening. We are so close in this country. And this is about the only time that I've really gotten up on a political soapbox. But I just want to make that clear. By way of information, not by way of trying to convince you of anything, I don't try to convince people of things. But to make it clear so that when I start projecting a program that talks about going ahead one more time and voting Democrat, only this time voting for real Democrats, that you're not going to, you know, lose it and go, well, this son of a bitch, I thought he was ready to cash in on the system. I am. I'm real close to it. But I can't, you know, I can't give up. This is by virtue of my birth only. I want to say this is my country, and I realize that it's difficult for me to say that, but by virtue of my birth, it is. And I don't want to see it die. I don't want to see it taken over by fascist pigs. I really don't. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This hour is, or the program tonight, I should say, is sponsored by Vulture's Picnic. It's a new book by Greg Palast, all about the Gulf oil spill, the BP event that occurred. How long ago was it? Greg Palast, of course, if you're familiar with him, God knows you should be, one of America's best investigative reporters. He's also got a sense of humor that is at once appreciated and at the same time scary as hell, at least to me. You should read Vulture's Picnic, and you can get the first chapter free. Go to gregpalast.com. There's a T on the end of the palast, P-A-L-A-S-T, gregpalast.com or vulturespicnic.org and get the first chapter free. Got an email here from Joe in Temecula, California. This is kind of interesting. As a matter of fact, it's way beyond interesting. Mike, last night you touched on the remark made by Newt Gingrich that the Palestinians are an invented people. When asked later to explain what he meant, Newt doubled down and reaffirmed his asinine comment. Let's just set Newt Gingrich aside for a moment. He's just a pompous ass that creates his own reality and his own history in order to suit his own personal agenda. Currently, Newt's agenda is to win the Republican nomination. As such, he will do or say anything to win. For Newt Gingrich, the ends always justify the means. Instead of Newt, let's focus for a minute on Americans. Americans are a completely invented people. We were invented in 1789 when the Constitution was ratified. Anyone can be an American. You just have to be born here. Or you can come to America and after some time you can become a U.S. citizen. It doesn't matter what race, creed, color, or religion a person is. Anyone can be an American. Some sort of pure American race, we're referring to white people now, has never existed. There has never been a homogeneous American culture. The American people were completely invented on paper by the founders. Hell, Americans are not even as much a people as they are a concept. That's why so many so-called Americans self-identify as Italian Americans or Irish Americans or German Americans or Japanese Americans or Chinese Americans or African Americans or Mexican Americans or Cuban Americans ad nauseum. That's why so much of the culture and traditions coming from other countries continues to persist in America to this day, including things like, oh, St. Patrick's Day and Christmas. Americans are not a race. Americans are not an ethnic group. Americans have no culture. Anything remotely related to American culture is more regional than national. What do we have? Baseball on the 4th of July? Hot dogs and hamburgers? McDonald's and Walmart? So, while all you right-wingers nod in agreement when Newt says Palestinians are an invented people, just remember you too, Mr. Right-Winger, are an invented person. If you want to be a real person, Mr. Right-Winger, go back to the country your ancestors came from because you are not from here. Joe in Temecula, California. Excellent points. The only thing I would, slight disagreement about Native, so-called Native Americans, and I realize even Native Americans migrated here 20, 25,000 years ago from Asia. I guess that's the current anthropological theory. Okay, you know, I'd certainly accept that. But good points, Joe. Good points indeed. You know, another reason, I'll come to your phone calls here in just a minute. Another reason, you know, my idea about using the framework of the Democratic Party to begin to come awake as a people and put in office in the legislative branch, real Democrats. I'm talking primarily about the House because the Senate would be a little bit more difficult, but the mischief arises in the House, and I use the term advisedly. The fascism arises in the House. I'm talking about Democrats who would never have even allowed to come up for a vote something as abhorrent as the National Defense Authorization Act. The act has been changed a bit, and I don't it's been voted on, but the Congress in general, the House and the Senate, would give the President ultimate authority to detain American citizens indefinitely in military custody. Under the final version of this bill expected to pass this week, it was facing the threat of a presidential veto after the Obama administration complained that it restricted the administration's ability to fight terrorism and raised, quote, serious and unsettled legal questions, end quote. The conference committee working out the differences between the Senate and House versions of the bill added and amended several provisions in an attempt to produce legislation that would pass muster with President Barack Obama, who appealed personally for fixes. Now, as reported by the Huffington Post, the final version, or the version released last night, still contains the authority to indefinitely imprison suspects, including citizens captured in the United States and including Americans. Real Democrats, I don't believe, Democrats as per the charter or the structure of the Democratic Party would not have permitted this. If that's the case, then we have an awful lot of fake Democrats in the House and the Senate, don't we? Well, I want to get into this a little bit deeper, but let's do some phone calls here. Oh, there's our man Harrison. Hello, Harrison. Harrison on the edge.
Hey, Mike, I'm just retching at what you just said. You've nailed it so perfectly, and I could barely recover, I have to tell you.
About what?
About the defense authorization.
Oh,
bill.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. When this goes into effect, if it goes into effect, labor strikes, the Occupy movement, all sorts of citizen demand for justice are going to fall under the category of acts of terror.
Well, and, you know, even more, it turns out, according to C-SPAN anyway, at about 2 in the morning, they ran a little bit of footage, and Eric Cantor said that Obama insisted on having American citizens specifically put back into that so that it would pass muster from Obama. And the notion that Obama would trump a right-wing Republican in creating these stentorian, draconian acts of nothing short of Thomas Jefferson doing backflips while massaging George Orwell on the shoulders, it's egregious.
Well, I'm not wanting to get into one of those deals of let the two of them fight, but do you really believe, I hadn't heard that, do you really believe that Cantor was telling the truth?
No, but it would not surprise me, and I think this is the problem, Mike. It would not surprise me if it were true, and it should surprise me if it were true.
Oh, I get your point. Hold on a second. Let me do a break, and I'll come right back, Harrison. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Time I turn on the TV,
there's hope.
Somebody's acting crazy,
there's hope.
If you let it, it'll drive you crazy,
there's hope.
I'm taking back my power today,
there's hope.
Gas prices, they just keep on rising,
there's hope.
The government, they keep...
You are now entering a Flying Monkey Free Zone. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking with Harrison in L.A., with Occupy L.A. Harrison, I got an email from somebody who says they think you meant Carl Levin said he wanted the part put back in. Told Eric Cantor to put the part back in about arresting American citizens. It wasn't Obama. Are you there?
I am here.
Okay.
This was one of the call-in shows on C-SPAN.
Yeah, well, I think it's wrong. Buzzflash.com has it right here. I'm looking at it right now. According to Senator Carl Levin, who headed blah, 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 it was the White House that insisted on the military having the option, instead of police or federal law enforcement, to detain Americans considered belligerent. Okay, well, what am I trying to say here? I guess it wasn't Eric Cantor. It was Carl Levin.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just know the whole thing is ridiculous in a country like ours, but that's where we are.
It seems completely impossible. Now, had this happened under George Bush, which was certainly the Patriot Act was the beginning of this, but had it happened under him exactly like this, you know, we would be out on the streets, I think, somehow inconspicuously and quietly this is simply happening. And when you watch the progressive television and the rest, where you would think it would be the alarming lead story over and over again, they're really talking about pulling out of Afghanistan in the next year, and I'm so shocked and appalled, Mike, that it's my worst nightmare.
How does this play, if it plays at all, with the Occupy movement in L.A.? That's part one. Part two, the port closings that I guess it's been Occupy LA that's been involved in that. It may be more people. If you would talk about both of those, how does the this continuing to work towards this military takeover of the country, how's that playing with Occupy?
Well, we actually saw it play out yesterday morning around 5:30 a.m. Occupy showed up in large numbers in Long Beach, here in California. Long Beach, one of the largest ports in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring that to a halt would have significant repercussions on shipping and send a very loud message. Turns out, while this was not a published event, the date was published, but the when and the where specifically were not. The police were already there. They had pre-recorded announcements blaring through multiple horns. And here's what was interesting, Mike, because you rightly talk about the militarizing of police. And when we look at that, let's look at what that really means. It means that the technology of the most advanced military that humankind has ever known, that those kind of laser-guided weaponry, the audio capabilities, the three-dimensional tracking systems, all that are now being readily made available to regular policemen. And
right.
So the LAPD came in blaring announcements that people would be, if they didn't disperse, they would be used, they would be harmed by dog bite. Dog bite. And we're not talking chihuahua.
Well, you know, the USA Patriot Act, revised already. I'm surprised they haven't applied that provisions in that act against demonstrators who are arrested. Because if I remember right, the USA Patriot Act now gives police the authority, either federal police or local police, the authority to charge someone with an act of terror if they interfere in commerce. And closing a port or going on a strike constitutes interference if nothing else does.
I would say so. Equally, when you read that provision, you'll note that if you have a plot of land, a backyard, let's call it, with over 6 acres in it, and you're growing rhubarb, that would be an act of terror if you have more than 6 acres of growing your own crops without it having been cleared by the federal government first.
Jesus Christ,
so,
Harrison.
Don't enjoy that pie too much over the holiday.
All right, listen, I want you to talk some more about Occupy LA, but we have another one of these abominable breaks coming up. So if you don't mind, can I put you back on hold?
Yeah, did you say abominable?
I said something like that. I have no idea what I said. You know, it's 10:30 here on the East, all right?
Yeah.
All right, Harrison, I'll put you on hold and come back to you as soon as we take this break. We're talking with Harrison. Harrison on the Edge. What station is he on, Kathy? Pacifica, with the Pacifica station in L.A. and probably all over the country. I should have it written down in front of me, and I don't. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Redefining Anger Management. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, we're talking with Harrison, used to be known, a.k.a. Harrison on the Edge. I'm sorry I got your station wrong. It's a couple of people written to me, KPFK, and it's called The Smart Show?
It is called The Smart Show.
Oh.
That doesn't mean it is, but it's a great name.
It is. I like The Smart Show. All right, where were we now? You were telling me about the encounter you had with the militarization of police at Occupy L.A.
Yes, the multiple loudspeakers coming in from various angles, not only threatening dog bite, rubber bullets, chemical weaponry, non-lethal, of course. That depends on the person being hit.
Right.
And if they're maybe, you know, under 5 years old. All of these things come into play, and we forget that when we're looking at the kind of ammunition and assault that they're using. We forget the age group. We forget people's infirmities. There are indeed old hippies, and a lot of them are very old.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on there, but the cops were prepared, and they were prepared to use serious force, and because it was raining like cats and dogs, people ended up dispersing anyway, because, you know, in L.A., when it's like 40-something degrees and raining, it's intolerable.
Right.
You know how we are.
Sure. Yeah, a bunch of whiny asses. Hey, so let me get your take now on your perception of the next visible move by the Occupy movement itself. Now, I realize it's all disparate groups. There's no connection. This is an independent grassroots movement. But what's your sense of the next action, whether it is in public or not in public, for Occupy?
Well, the side that I'm more aligned with are the ones that go after the banks directly. Example, a week ago, when Bank of America did its routine auction in Norwalk, which it does typically on Fridays, and it will take houses, which it claims it holds the mortgage for,
right,
and has kicked people out on the street, and we find that the mortgages had literally cut and paste names on it. You know the whole story.
Sure,
well,
sure.
A bunch of occupiers showed up, and while they were doing this auction, started creating a major ruckus. And taking the notion that the bankers were honest, fair players, reading something off a piece of paper that was confirmed and true, but making it all look like it was made up, like it was Mr. Ringling's big top,
mm-hmm,
and brought the credibility down to the point where Bank of America had to stop their auction right then, right there in Los Angeles. These kind of things are now being copied and done everywhere else. The problem is that we now know that Homeland Security has been orchestrating conference calls with,
right,
many of the city's mayors,
mm-hmm,
and you have federal help to really blow these things apart before they even get going. Phones are like more likely being tapped. They are anyway, but in a much more official capacity. So how long do we have to get together and peaceably assemble before that plug gets pulled? These are questions that are hard to answer.
What about the idea, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's already being tried, at these foreclosure auctions, people dressed up like good little capitalists showing up in suits and carrying briefcases who are actually Occupy people and bidding on the houses. Is there a law against that?
No, I love the idea. But as you pointed out many times, Mike, the people who are in Occupy are the down and out. They're already so screwed that they're desperate and have nowhere else to go, so they don't have a suit and a briefcase anymore.
Well, that's not true, is it, Harrison? With I spent a lot of time in D.C. With the movement that connected with Occupy. It was the October 2011 movement. Also, just from looking at video and from knowing people who are involved in New York and in Philadelphia, in Tampa, these are not down and outers. These are college graduates. They are grad students. They are, granted, they're unemployed. because there's no work. But I think some of them would have no problem whatsoever in disguising themselves, man or woman, to appear to be a legitimate buyer and throwing a wrench, a monkey wrench, into that whole foreclosure sale on the steps of the courthouse machine that is just so obscene.
I think that's a great action plan for radio listeners who have an activist bet, who want to get involved, and I think that's totally clever. So if I can steal that from you, give you proper attribution,
I think it's great.
It's
a cafeteria. Take what you want. What is your next, you personally, if you don't mind my asking, what's your next activity or action or thought about what you're going to do regarding Occupy?
Well, my thing, like yours, is to use the bullhorn in the most practical ways possible while, you know, offering good radio. So I had coverage from the port and let regular people who could not be there, who would not be there for purposes of losing their jobs or other things, be able to participate in this, keep it alive, and help explain it from the perspective of regular Americans. So really, that's my thing. I do these hangouts at night at 6 p.m. Pacific time using Google, where I go over the news stories of the day, and people can call in using Skype or video or even with phone lines. I have 50 of them, and we talk about this stuff. And it is this grassroots idea rather than slick and polished as it would be on the air. Short of that, I have to be careful that I don't end up in jail because, you know, then I'm gone. I'm disappeared. Right. And this thing that I'm able to do goes away with me. So I got to tread lightly a little bit.
How do people participate in the online thing you were just talking about?
Go to GoHarrison.com, one word, GoHarrison.com, and we do we call it Harrison's Hangout, and it's at 6 Pacific, Monday through Friday. When we can, we open up 50 dedicated old-fashioned phone lines as well, and it's a free-for-all, round-robin, people leak information, talk about stuff. It's fun, but it's pretty gritty and neat, and that's technology used against the man that the man created. It's beautiful.
GoHarrison.com, correct?
That's it, GoHarrison.com.
And once somebody goes there, how to participate in this is clearly laid out. So people.
Yeah, we actually have very smartly laid it out in a single paragraph. It took hours.
I'll bet. I'll bet it did. Well, you know, L.A. time, of course it took hours.
Well, I know. I mean, you get up at 10 and work on your tan, and then, you know, around noon or so, you get into it.
Right. All right. Well, listen, we gotta talk again. We gotta do this on a more regular basis. It's up to you. Just shoot us an email. Let us know. We'd love to have you on anytime. All right.
Yeah, and I'll just chat in the background with Kathy, and we will, as Captain Picard would say, make it so.
There you go. There you go. All right, Harrison, everybody who is familiar with you appreciates your work and what you're doing, and also the sense of humor. You still have your sense of humor. Mine is starting to shrivel and die, and I hope a whole bunch of people who tune into this program will now go to GoHarrison.com and participate in this. So take it easy. Keep it in the road, okay?
Hey, you know, Mike, thank you for being the lighthouse, the 1,000-watt halogen airline landing lamp that I need on my runway so I don't forget what the hell I'm supposed to do here.
Right, okay. All right. All right, Harrison, take it easy.
All right, my friend.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. GoHarrison.com, 1,000-watt halogen lamp. Woo! GoHarrison.com. Here in the East, 6 o'clock. I'm sorry, 9 o'clock. Hell, that's right when we start our program. Oh, you can do both. 9 o'clock in the East, and correspondingly across the time zone, 6 o'clock LA time, or West Coast time. GoHarrison.com. Check out what he's doing. I had I'm so out of touch here. I had no idea he was doing this. It sounds very interesting. 50 phone lines? Jesus God. Where are we? We're right here. Stephen in Burbank. Stephen, I've got about 10 seconds. I got to take a break, but I'll come back to you.
Okay. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
On my favorite top 10 luminaries list is Harrison.
Harrison?
And you, Noam Chomsky, Father Wisdom, a.k.a. Sanchez in East L.A., in that order. And they vary sometimes.
That's a pretty eclectic group, for sure, for sure.
Okay.
All right, hold on a second. Hold on, Stephen. I got to do some commercials or a break here. I'm not sure what the break is, but we'll come back right after and talk with Stephen. And Mark, I see you holding on for 23 minutes, so I'll get to you coming back, too. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. For the hour, stick around. Next hour, after a little lighthearted fun with a former Alabama politician, we're going to talk about education, and not in a dull, boring way. God, I hate to tap that suffix onto it, but stick around, okay? Right now, excuse me, we're talking with Stephen in Burbank, California. A democracy and voting Obama. All right, go ahead.
Okay, Clinton ran for a second term. I voted for Nader. I vote for a third party against the Blue Dogs and the Dinos, and I send my sample ballot to the DNC. And then I saw a little window sticker, and it said RIP USA, born, 1776, mm-hmm. July 4th, died January 20th, 2009. And I thought, I am going to vote for Obama just to spite that guy, you know, just to get my revenge.
Yeah. The attitude of so many people in this country, and I'm only talking about the racial aspect now, about Obama and his youth. It's just, I don't know, it rubs me the wrong way. I've said it a million times. Obama's basic economic policies, or at least the people he surrounds himself with who make economic policy, seem to me to be just insane. I realize that Obama, and I've got to believe this, I don't know this, but people a lot smarter than I am have told me this, that Obama, with his bailout of a couple of industries, really saved this country from going into another depression. And, I've got to believe that from the standpoint of I'm not the brightest bulb in the marquee, and people who I consider to be smart have told me this. And they don't have a particular political agenda. They're observers of what's going on. So there have been some things that Obama has done that I'm in complete agreement with, but the things that he's done that I'm in total disagreement with are the kinds of things that you totally disagree with on a visceral level. It's not like, oh, well, he voted for an increase in taxes. Who cares about that? But when Obama, the Obama administration continues to do what they did to, for example, to Bradley Manning, or when the Obama administration turns right around and issues drilling, exploratory drilling permits to BP to go back into the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, these are just two examples. I could probably, given 10 minutes, I could come up with 10 or 12 more. This is the thing that turns me off about this presidency. But like I said before, who knows? I mean, Christ, Stephen, I don't know what happens to people when they get in there.
Okay, well, this is what it is. He is an establishmentarian politician. He's status quo. He goes with the flow. And if it means letting everything go down the tubes, well, that's what the meme is, because there is no democracy in this country, per se, as we would like it to be.
I think the emphasis should be on the legislative branch. Obama doesn't make laws. No president makes law. Not yet. We're getting to the point where a president possibly will be making law, but we're not there yet. That's why I say the focus at this point, as long as there is a heavy majority of righteous progressives in the legislative branch, that to me is pretty much a guarantee. Now, granted, a president can stop legislation with his veto pen, but again, it can be overridden. That was the genius of the framers. There were all kinds of checks and balances put in place to stop a tyrant from taking over. Now, Bush and Cheney and Reagan and some of these other ones tried desperately to remove those checks and balances, and I don't think Obama has done anything to unremove them, if that's a word. But it's the legislative branch, Stephen, that I'm talking about.
Well, that's when we look at the unwashed masses. This is when we find out that maybe the people aren't so stupid after all. There's a movement right now. I'm sure you've heard about it. OWS, Occupy Wall Street, worldwide.
Right.
It's irrelevant. To me, it's irrelevant whether it's Gingrich or Obama or Republican House and Senate and White House. Because this movement is beyond that. I firmly believe that. And, you know, money to lead are not going to allow progressives dictating that the wealthy must, you know, stop being selfish pigs. They stop being thieves, you know.
Well, it's got to be a two- or three-pronged effort.
Exactly.
I understand that. There has to be pressure from the street, but there also has to be something, some body of lawmakers who will respond to the pressure.
Yeah.
And so it has to be, that's how you destroy these capitalist pigs. You've got to have a pincher effect. It cannot be, you're right, it can't be legislation if the legislators are all bought and paid for. But if you have a powerful, street, a force acting from below, and an equally powerful progressive movement acting from above, if you will, that are in the Congress, and the below and the above are relative terms. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly. I call it inside outside. Now think of Elizabeth Warren, Dennis Kucinich,
right?
A few of the others. You know, even this clown Bill Rosenthal here at L.A. City Council. You know, there was a little bit of inside outside with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it's allowed to grow a little bit, and then it gets knocked down. It's allowed to grow a little bit. This movement is on its own. I mean, no matter who's in office.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. We understand that it's politics. And one of the signs at Occupy LA was forget about the ideologies. Just look at the corruption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Listen, Stephen, we're about to start the closing, our closing music here. I appreciate what you had to say.
Okay.
Call again, all right?
Tell Mark I said sorry about that.
Okay. I'll tell him. Take care.
Okay. All shout out to Mark.
All right. Quick break. When we come back, I've got to move on. So if you're on hold, Kathy's probably going to bring the hammer down and we'll try again tomorrow night. But I've got to get on to this, the other two topics, that I've got planned for tonight. Stick around. All right. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by John O'Connor. He has a message here along with his sponsorship. His message is, teach your children well. Play the Malloy Show podcast for them every day. Ah! Well, John, that's... Okay. That's a nice thought. Well, I don't have any problem with that except for the coarse language that I use. That's the only problem, you know. The program is PG-13 for sure. I think John means teach your teenage children well. That's it. There you go. Teach your teenage children well. Right, John? Thanks, John. We appreciate the sponsorship. No, I do. I'm fully aware of the kind of language I use on this program. And I don't apologize for it at all. But it's just, you know, not necessarily kind of language for children. Right? Before I get to the serious stuff this hour, I don't know if you're aware of this, but a former top state official in Alabama, what did he do? He was, I think he ran for governor in 2010, Republican. He ran in the Republican primary. He's a former Alabama State Director of Economic and Community Affairs. He's a Republican. If he's Director of Economic and Community Affairs, that means, you know, destroy all the regulations, release the monster of unbridled capitalism, you know, the usual stuff. Anyway, he's been discovered, this guy, Bill Johnson. He's 52. He's been discovered by a writer for the New Zealand Herald. He's living a secret life in New Zealand. The Alabamian, the guy from Alabama, ran in the Republican governor's primary in 2010. What he's doing in New Zealand, he's a sperm donor for lesbian couples. Now, even though he's helping lesbian couples become pregnant, I'm sure that's not his primary objective for being a sperm donor. But that's what he's doing. Even though he did that, one of his main platforms in his race to be governor in 2010 was running against gay marriage and the usual demonizing of folks who happen to be gay. So he moves to New Zealand and becomes this sperm donor. He is living in Christchurch, New Zealand, working with the, well, he moved down there in early part of this year to work with the recovery effort following the earthquake that struck in February, remember? The New Zealand Herald is reporting that Mr. Johnson has been using an alias to meet with women who are seeking help getting pregnant. Now, the fly in the ointment, it might not be the proper metaphor, but is his wife was not aware of any of this. His wife thought he was in New Zealand, you know, helping with recovery and reconstruction. But the newspaper has reported, and now his wife has found out, that he has impregnated or attempted to impregnate 9 different women, 3 of whom were or are currently pregnant. The reporter for the New Zealand Herald approached Mr. Johnson last Thursday, where Johnson was spotted at a restaurant where he had recently finished dining with one of the women he had impregnated. Now, Johnson told the newspaper reporter that he's unable to have children with his wife, Kathy, and that becoming a biological father was, quote, a need that I have, end quote. A need that I have. He told the New Zealand Herald, quote, I'm married to the most beautiful woman in the world. When I married her, I knew we couldn't have any more children. I'm not sure what that means, any more children. Maybe They both have one or two or so. I don't know. She had a hysterectomy 10 years ago, Johnson said. There's nothing my wife would want to give me more in the world than a child of my own, end quote. Johnson said he planned to tell his wife, who's a former Mrs. Alabama, you know, beauty contest. He was going to tell her about his secret life after all the children that are a result of his sperm donorship were born. And he told the New Zealand Herald, quote, I've been trying to get my wife over here. He wants to get his family over there so I can be around for these children, he said. And his wife, in an email to the Alabama Press Register, the Alabama newspaper, his wife said, quote, this is a really, really difficult time for our family. I'm still in disbelief and very hurt, and our family has a lot of healing to do, end quote. Well, I don't know. Maybe they have children, or they brought children from previous marriages, but so strange, these Republicans. So strange, these Christian right-wing Republicans. I mean, they really are. It's just... And again, I see nothing here but blatant, sickening, throat-tightening hypocrisy. This is a guy who's willing to run for the governorship of Alabama on the backs of gay couples who happen to want to form a marriage contract, just like this freak and his wife were able to do. And he will run against that, as all Republicans do. And being an Alabama, white, male, Southern, Christian, right-wing Republican, oh my God. You know, he also spent, I'm sure, a lot of his time demonizing folks who happen to be gay, happen to be homosexual. That's what you do now if you're evangelical Christian. And to hell with this hate the sin, love the sinner crap. You know, first of all, it's not a sin. Secondly, the people who have to be gay are not sinners. But that's what these evangelicals will do. It gives them a pious attitude that they can project and say, well, no, I love gay people. I love black people, gay people, illegal immigrants. I love them all. I really do. However, I don't think the black folks ought to be able to vote. I don't think the immigrants ought to be able to be here. And I don't think gay people should have kids. And then he moves to New Zealand and does precisely what so many gay couples would like to do, but are denied the right or the ability to do it, except in certain areas of the country, because of the bigotry and the legal restrictions against them to begin with. I mean, these people never fail to amaze me. They just never fail to amaze me. And this sneaky son of a bitch, you know, rather than stay here and donate his sperm to women who might want to have a child and for whatever reason don't want to do it in the manner of having sexual intercourse with a male or can't do it through sexual intercourse with whatever. But rather than do that, this sleazy bastard sneaks away to New Zealand under the pretense, well, I'm going to go down there and, you know, help him rebuild there. You know, it's the Jesus thing to do. Don't you know, wifey? I'll be gone for a while. I'll have fun. Toodaloo. And he gets down there, and so far he's had 11 attempts. I don't know. It turns my stomach. These people always just turn my stomach. Your lover's in a dangerous time. Sometimes you're made to feel as if your love's a crime. Nothing worth having comes without some kind of fight. Gotta kick in the darkness till it bleeds daylight. Lovers in a dangerous time. Lovers in a dangerous time.
Live Streaming with Mike Malloy.
The show is brought to you by the new book, Vulture's Picnic. A new book by Greg Palast, one of America's best investigative reporters, one of the funniest. You should read Vulture's Picnic. I am. And I don't know. He makes me laugh when he writes sometimes. But the book also just, How do you read something like this and not get furious? Especially when you realize that everything we've been told about what happened in the Gulf of Mexico oil disaster was either a lie, a half-truth, an untruth, or an old magician's trick of, you know, misleading you. Look over here while I do this over here. Anyway, get the book. You can get the first chapter free, by the way, at vulturespicnic.org or Greg Palast. T on the end of it, Greg Palast, although you pronounce it Palast, GregPalast.com. You got to read the book. It's a good one. All right. We're finished with the Georgia, or the former Alabama legislator and his little secret life. I don't know how it concerns you. It concerns me greatly about the education problem in this country. The No Child Left Behind thing was ridiculous. The Race to the Top thing from Obama is ridiculous. You know, we've talked about this before. To expect school teachers to meet a certain predetermined standard or level, testing level, for all the students within their classroom, and then the principal of that school, all the classrooms within her school or his school, to meet a certain testable level is insane. It cannot be done. And yet that has been official policy promoted by the federal government, and of course they use purse strings in order to, in place of a whip, but the net effect is the same. It's been in effect now for what, 14 or 15 years, where, 12 years, where the performance of a school based on arbitrary testing determines to greater or lesser degrees how much money that school is going to get. Having had children go through the public school system, a couple of my older ones went through partly through a private school system, but having been involved in public schools now for the better part of 30 years, I can tell you that to set these goals and then to punish schools who don't meet the goals has resulted in where we are now. These massive cheating scandals. Kids who cannot read in the fifth grade up to level, cannot read in the eighth grade up to level, don't understand math beyond basic elementary adding and subtracting. And the onus of all this is placed on the teachers and the principals. And this, to me, is really, I want to say it's an outrage, but it's worse than an outrage. It shows just this insane, once again, capitalist attitude. I'm sorry, it's there. Every place you turn, it's there. We're going to reward your school with profit or loss, depending on the product you turn out. Now, the problem, of course, is that the kids who show up for an education every single day at your typical elementary school kind of cross the spectrum, unless they live in a certain zip code where kids are pretty much of the same socioeconomic grouping. But most public schools, that's the thing about public schools, you have to take in the child. If the child lives in the district, you have to take that child. Now, capitalist America wants to destroy the public school system. That's what No Child Left Behind is all about. That's what Race to the Top is all about. It is destroying the public school system and replacing it with private enterprise or capitalism or charter schools or money funneled through organizations run by right-wing destroyers like Jeb Bush. Oh, yeah, he's still around. Why is it that the people who come up with these ideas are blind to the fact that so many kids, especially, yes, in certain areas of the city or the county or the suburbs, low-income areas, where kids simply cannot reach the levels that these so-called experts say, this is what you have to reach or we're going to punish your school. The socioeconomic divide, according to a recent article in the New York Times, has become more pronounced now. It far exceeds the gap between that old boogaboo between white and black students. Wealthy students and poor students. The gap. I'm going to talk more about this when we come back. Stay with us.
You might have a body of fine proportion and a hungry mind. A handsome face and a flashing wit. Lips that kiss and eyes that shine.
Before the hour, this hour is being sponsored by John O'Connor. His message, teach your children well. Play the Malloy Show podcast for them every day. Okay. So we're talking about the idea. There's an article in the New York Times a couple days ago. The headline, as a matter of fact, it was on the op-ed page. The headline was Class Matters. Why won't we admit it? And it's very true. Trying to educate children with a national standard or even a statewide standard is pretty crazy. Because what these corporate planners, what these capitalist planners who decide what is going to be the educational standards, what they leave out, and they do this deliberately because it can't be this stupid. It can't be an oversight. They leave out the fact that in a family whose income is, say, $100,000 a year, is going to produce from that environment, that family environment, children more inclined to be teachable than a family whose income is $30,000 a year. Now, am I engaging in class warfare? No, I'm stating some very obvious truths and facts that you already know. Poorer families who don't have the resources, in some instances, even to provide their children with a decent breakfast. Meals during the day, proper grooming, books in the house, magazines, newspapers. Educational tools that middle class families normally have around, and the middle class is being devastated. On the one hand, capitalism is ripping the middle class to pieces. On the other hand, capitalism is saying, here are the educational standards, meet them, or we are going to so demonize or punish your school that your kid isn't going to learn anything. So here we sit, you know, the greatest country in the world, American exceptionalism. And half of our kids can't read up to expected age levels or do math up to expected age levels. Why is that? So the answer, of course, from corporate America is to privatize the schools. Why, of course, make money on education, or what passes for education. Wouldn't you love to have a classroom that's sponsored by ExxonMobil or Burger King or Walmart? Wouldn't that be a nice nice classroom? And as the writers in the article, in the op-ed piece said, the Occupy movement has catalyzed rising anxiety over income inequality. We desperately need a similar reminder of the relationship between economic advantage and student performance. The correlation has been abundantly documented. There was the famous Coleman Report 50 years ago, 1966. And new research by Sean Reardon of Stanford University traces the achievement gap between children from high and low income families over the last 50 years and finds that that gap, like I mentioned, now far exceeds the gap between white and black students. And data from the National Assessment of Educational Progress show that more than 40% of the variation in average reading scores and 46% of the variation in average math scores across states is associated with variation in child poverty rates. Do you understand that? Nearly half of the variation is dependent upon poverty rates. Child poverty rates. What have we been talking about off and on over the past 3 years here about this uptick in child poverty that is an outrage in this great United States of America? We don't do this here. Oh, my God. We have U.S. exceptionalism. We're special. And we don't give a damn about educating our children. We don't give a damn about taking into consideration what is the child taking to the classroom every morning. Think about it. Especially in an area where all of a sudden now there is high unemployment. Forget this 8.6% horse crap. You know that's garbage. We're talking about effective unemployment rates approaching 20% in this country. You know it as well as I know it. I don't care what the government says or doesn't say. And by unemployment, I'm also including people who all of a sudden find themselves doing temp work, making $10 an hour, maybe 20 hours a week. Whoa, you call that employment? So in areas where you have high unemployment, foreclosure rates on homes, families breaking up because of the economic pressure, and then two or three kids in the family. You got a third grader, fifth grader, maybe an eighth grader, and those kids are supposed to go to school, and the teacher and the principal and the system within that school or that school district, they're supposed to take these kids in who are coming in terrified because they watch their parents breaking to pieces. Because the parents now are unemployed and there is no work. So the kids don't come to school with adequate nutrition. They don't come to school with adequate supplies. But they do come to school with a threat that if they don't score such and such on one of these goddamn tests, then the school's going to be punished. The kid will be punished. The principal will be punished. The teacher will be punished. To what end? To what end? To destroy the school, to ruin the system, to form charter schools, to come up with, okay, what are we going to do? We don't have a tax base anymore. No money's coming in. We can't raise taxes. We can't do this. We can't. Oh, I know. Let's turn it over to corporate America. They're really good at this sort of thing. This is madness. This is just is absolute madness. Can anyone credibly believe that the mediocre or worse overall performance rate of American students is unrelated to the fact that one-fifth of American children live in poverty? One-fifth of American children live in poverty. And the number is probably higher when real-world numbers are factored in. These kids go to school every day. And what do they take to school with them? Fear, anxiety, hunger maybe, upset, uncertainty about what mom and dad are going to do. If there is a mom and dad, but you got to go to school, don't you, Junior? And you have to score thus and such on a standardized test. So what do the teachers do? Here in Atlanta and other parts around the country, the teachers started altering the test scores. Why? Because the teachers are criminal? You can make your own judgment about that. But maybe it's because the teachers understand something fundamental, that they cannot get these test scores up because the kids coming in don't have the tools to do it, and they're not going to get the tools to do it because the family is going to remain unemployed. The bank is going to go ahead with the foreclosure. The people are going to go ahead and face homelessness. And the kids are supposed to deal with this. So what do the teachers do? Well, if we don't hit a certain level on our test scores, we're going to lose what little funding we do have. We're going to have to make some changes here. And the changes they make? The test scores. Yeah, let's condemn the teachers. Sure, let's do that. As the article, the op-ed piece said, federal education policy seems blind to all this. No Child Left Behind, the Bush program, required all schools to bring all students to high levels of achievement, but took note of the challenges that disadvantaged students face. The legislation did, to be sure, specify that subgroups defined by income, minority status, and proficiency in English must meet the same achievement standard. But it did so only to make sure that schools did not ignore their disadvantaged students, not to help them address the challenges that they carry with them into the classroom. So why do presumably, and this is where I disagree with the writers, well-intentioned policymakers ignore or deny the correlations of family background and student achievement? I don't think they ignore it at all. I think they're fully aware of it. But this is programmed and programmable failure. And it doesn't come from the students or the teachers. I don't know how you feel about this. I don't know if you have kids. Maybe you're too old. Maybe you chose not to have children. Maybe you just haven't had children. Whatever your relationship with kids is. Whether or not we succeed as a viable society, a society within which we want to remain, to raise our children, to have a life that makes some kind of sense, it all depends on our education system, doesn't it? And on top of the poverty, you have this unending assault from these right-wing evangelical freaks who want to destroy what's left of science and social studies and replace it with books of the Bible. My God.
Where on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a good.
Tough blues, soft lights, and a.
Sponsored by John O'Connor, who says, teach your children well, play the Malloy Show podcast for them every day. Ooh, that's kind of scary, John. But thanks for the sponsorship. Yeah, you're probably right. So, there is a final rationale for denying the correlation between low income and poor performance, low family income, and poor performance in schools. And as the authors of this article in the Times yesterday point out, as we are now seeing, requiring all schools to meet the same high standards for all students, regardless of family background, will inevitably lead either to large numbers of failing schools or to a dramatic lowering of state standards. Both serve to discredit the public education system and give support to arguments that the system is failing and needs fundamental change, like privatization. So there you go. What does privatization mean? It means the capitalists take over something, another institution, and destroy it. Turn it into something that will serve the interest of capitalism, not the interests of education or awareness or knowledge. And as the writers of this op-ed piece pointed out, given the budget crises at the national and state levels and the strong political power of conservative groups, a significant effort to reduce poverty or deal with the closely related issue of racial segregation is not in the political cards. Capitalism demands an uneducated or barely educated workforce that will get into the mines, get into the factories, get into the fields, shut their mouths, do the work, make the $6.50 an hour or the $12 a day, live like a bunch of goddamn serfs so that the top 1% and especially the top 0.1% can continue to enjoy a lifestyle unimaginable throughout the history of the human race. It all boils down to a very simple formula, doesn't it? Revolution always arises out of the middle class. The goal of the capitalists is to destroy the middle class. For very, to me, obvious reasons. So the writers say, large bodies of research have shown how poor health and nutrition inhibit child development and learning, and conversely, how high-quality early childhood and preschool education programs can enhance learning and development. We understand the importance of early exposure to rich language on future cognitive development. We know that low-income students experience greater learning loss during the summer when their more privileged peers are enjoying travel and other enriching activities. Since they can't take on poverty itself, education policymakers should try to provide poor students with the social support and replicate Jeffrey Canada's well-known success with the Harlem Children's Zone, which is occurring even as we speak. But any efforts to do this are sporadic and desperately in need of support. In North Carolina, the two-year-old East Durham Children's Initiative is one of many efforts around the country to replicate Canada's well-known successes with the Harlem Children's Zone. Say Yes to Education in Syracuse, New York, supports access to after-school programs and summer camps and places social workers in schools. Social workers, oh my God, you know what right-wingers think of social workers, right? In Omaha, Building Bright Futures sponsors school-based health centers, offers mentoring and enrichment services. Citizen Schools, based in Boston, recruits volunteers in seven states to share their interests and skills with middle school students. Promise Neighborhoods, an Obama administration effort that gives grants to programs like these, is a welcome first step, but it has been underfinanced. And the Senate and the House have recently approved a $700 billion war budget. If 10% of that were diverted, oh, Jesus, why even say it? Other countries already pursue these kinds of strategies. For example, in Finland, with its famously high-performing schools, the schools provide food and free health care for students. Free health care? Oh, wouldn't the capitalists have diarrhea over that one in this country? Free food? Free health care? What's next?
free this, free that. Next thing you know, as Newt Gingrich puts it, you have a bunch of kids that don't know how to work.
Oh, my God. Here in the U.S., you know what's fashionable now among supporters of the no excuses approach to school improvement is to accuse anyone raising the poverty issue of letting the schools off the hook. Or what do the right wingers always say? Oh, that's class warfare. You know something, truth seekers? We better wake up. We better wake up in this country to what the capitalists and the right wingers are doing to us. You might want to look to the Occupy movement. They have laid it out very clearly. And for those people who say, oh, who's your leaders? What's your agenda? My advice to you is get the dirt out of your ears. Get the right-wing, evangelical, Christian, crazy, political, conservative mud out of your head and open up and take a look and listen. You know your future depends on it, doesn't it, huh? More importantly, the future of your kids. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.